You are Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast on the Houston Rockets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into Locked On Rockets, your home for daily and post-game commentary on your Houston Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official flagship. As we wake up on this Sunday, what a glorious Sunday it is in Houston. The Rockets now 49-13, winners of a season-best 15 consecutive basketball games. That's after the 123-120 victory come-from-behind fashion against the Boston Celtics on Saturday night, the ABC primetime game, which certainly lived up to the hype. Celtics fall to 44-20 on the year, but it was a game effort by the Celtics, as you would expect on that type of stage. The Celtics didn't have great games from Kyrie Irving and Al Horford, but by and large, the Celtics, they shot over 48% from the field, over 54% from three. They were led by 21 points off the bench from Marcus freaking Morris and a plus 23, 18 points and 6 rebounds in 19 minutes from Greg Monroe. When your bench players are playing like that, that more than offsets a little bit of sluggish shooting from Kyrie Irving and Al Horford. And the Celtics did everything possible to win that game. But the Rockets, even with Chris Paul and James Harden, not at the usual levels of efficiency. Combined, they were just 11 of 29 from the field for below 38%. But the Rockets found a way to dig deep, even down 6 with under 3 minutes to go. They finished the game, the Rockets did, on a 16-7 kick, and just so much heart, so much grit. And that's what stands out. I'm actually going to lead with a quote from Bill Simmons. Of course, you know him, editor of The Ringer, longtime NBA fan, but folks know him more. Boston, those are his boys. He is a Boston sports fan, first and foremost. And so, of course, he was cheering for the Celtics that game on Saturday night. But on his Twitter feed, at Bill Simmons, Houston is much tougher mentally than they used to be. That, to me, sums it up perfectly. The defining sequence in this game, we mentioned the 16-7 run that the Rockets went on in the final 3 minutes. Well, folks, with 75 seconds left, the Rockets were down three. James Harden missed a three that would have tied the game, and the Celtics corralled the rebound. Then P.J. Tucker and Chris Paul stole that rebound away, kicked it back to Trevor Ariza, who hit a three to tie the game. Then, on the ensuing possession, Ariza jumped the passing lane, stole it, took it full court for the layup that put the Rockets in front, where they would stay for the remainder of the game. Also, kudos to the Rockets for fouling up three in the final 15 seconds. I think that is by far the easiest math play. You just have to be disciplined and well-coached enough to make sure that you don't foul the other team when they're shooting a three. Kudos to the Rockets. They did that, and the Celtics never really got a clean look to tie the game. Now, in the final 2 seconds, they did get a wild fadeaway from Marcus Smart that happened so quickly the Rockets were not able to foul, and that's part of, you know, learning when to foul and when not to. You can't risk. You have to have the discipline to know when you can't. And that, you get a fadeaway shot, there's that much you can do. Fortunately, it missed, and the Rockets got the 123-120 win. More than any individual player, because we're going to do our usual 3 points recap, more than any individual player, what stands out to me is that grit. Because as we mentioned, Chris Paul and James Harden, Paul had 15 points, 5-11 shooting, 7 assists. James had 26 points, 10 assists, 7 rebounds, but was just 6 of 18 from the field, 11 of 29, below 38% combined for those two guys. Folks, you hear a lot of narratives about the Rockets being star-driven, and I suppose to some extent they are, but it's not like the Rockets are just going out and chasing stars without regards for chemistry, for role players. No, they get that. That's why if you follow this team, it's not just about the addition of Chris Paul this year. It's about the depth of the supporting cast of the role players. We've certainly talked a lot this year about the additions of Luke Bamute, PJ Tucker, Joe Johnson, guys that were not on the squad last year. And in addition to just what those guys bring themselves, even in a game where against the Celtics team that led for most of the game by as much as 9 points, last year, I think it would have been a game where Trevor Ariza easily plays 43, 44 minutes because there's no one else you can trust defensively in a stage like this. No, even the Rockets playing from behind and wanting it that much, they were able to limit Ariza to 34 minutes, and that's probably a big part of why he was so crisp down the stretch, able to hit that three, jump the passing lane, get the steal, go in for the full court layup and transition. Ariza finished with 21 points on 8 of 18 shooting. By the way, Trevor Ariza, in the 5 games since his return from a hamstring injury, folks, he's shooting almost 45% from the field and above 42% from 3. And those 5 games include a game in Utah, the second night of back-to-back, in which he was just 3 of 13. Take away that one and he's shooting over 50%. That's just one example, of course, but we have seen this in the past. A fresh Trevor Ariza is typically a much more efficient Trevor Ariza. The problem is that the Rockets do not have the depth of players to allow him to be fresh, because his skills in terms of his grit, his defense, his desire, all the qualities that we talked about leading off this program, the Bill Simmons quote about how much tougher the Rockets are mentally. Well, yeah, Trevor Ariza has always been that tough. And the Rockets know that. That's why he's been such a bargain the last 4 years since the Rockets signed him for that mid-level exception in July of 2014. But they have had to overextend him in the past because of how rare those skills are. And then you see a fall-off in terms of his percentages and his efficiency. Well, now, because in addition to Trevor Ariza, you supplemented that with guys like Luke Bamute, like P.J. Tucker, who, by the way, in addition to the steal, P.J. had 9 points, made 50% of his threes, including what, in my opinion, might have been the biggest shot of the game, the three with 2:58 left in the fourth quarter that cut it from 6-3, which kind of just was a statement to everyone in Toyota Center that, hey, the Rockets were not going away quietly. They had one more push in them. Because this was the game, the Rockets got back even a brief lead a couple of times here and there, but it just seemed like the Celtics always answered back. And when Marcus Morris hit a three late in the fourth quarter to put the Celtics up 6, it was fair to wonder if the Rockets had enough in the tank to mount one final charge. Well, that P.J. Tucker 3 made clear that, yes, the Rockets were going to make that final charge. And then, of course, P.J. and Chris Paul got the steal on the big rebound. They kicked it to Ariza for 3. And at that point, game on. Then Ariza got the steal, went transition, and put the Rockets in front with just over a minute to play, where they would remain for the duration of the game. By the way, plus-minus does not lie in this game. Trevor Ariza, plus 13 in his 34 minutes. P.J. Tucker, plus 8. Also, can't forget James Harden, even though he was 6 of 18. James Harden, by far, the best on the court, plus 21 in his 38 minutes. We mentioned the shooting struggles, but he did have 10 assists. So, James, even if it wasn't the prototype night that we have come to expect from him in terms of taking over a game, in terms of shot making, he still was a huge difference maker overall. Also had 5 steals. So this was, again, even James not shooting well, 10 assists, 7 rebounds, 5 steals, plus 21. James found a way to impact the game in other ways. And I think his mental toughness should be thrown in there as well. We talk about the role players, so I think the addition of these new role players, certainly they're the headliners, and they've brought a lot in terms of not just mental traits, but physical as well, because of how that depth allows the Rockets to better manage minutes up and down the roster. No one other than James Harden, who played 38 minutes, played more than 35. So the role players get a lot of the credit, but folks, I think James Harden as a leader, he plays a role in instilling that confidence, that culture as well. And in a game where he shot just 33% from the field, again, 10 assists, 7 rebounds, 5 steals, also got to the line 13 times, made 11 of those, he found a way to impact the game significantly, even without his best stuff. And that's what great players do. That's what MVPs are able to do, even if they're not able to throw it in the ocean on a given night. So I think James Harden, it kind of was under the radar because he didn't have the true highlight reel play right at the end. But folks, his mental toughness, in my opinion, was on full display as well. One final guy that I want to throw a shout out to in this opening segment, talking about the team's grit, mental toughness, desire. I can't believe we made it 9 minutes into the program and we haven't discussed Clint Capela, who in 34 minutes was second only to James Harden, plus 19 in the plus minus, with 17 rebounds in those 34 minutes. Folks, when you play the Celtics, the best defensive team in the NBA, you know what you're going to get. They are very physical. They slow the game down. And the Rockets actually out-rebounded them in this game 40-38. The Rockets, they matched the physicality, and Clint Capela was a huge part of that. Again, 17 boards, 14 on defense in his 34 minutes. And what's most amazing to me about this for Clint, it actually felt like it was a game in which he left a lot of points on the floor. He had just 8 points, 3 of 6 from the field. But when you think Clint Capela in this game, you'll probably remember the dunk he missed uncontested at the end of the first half. You'll think of the ensuing putback that was right there and didn't go in. He wasn't as dynamic as he usually is when he's averaging close to 15 points a game this year in under 30 minutes per game. He didn't have, as we mentioned with James Harden, and maybe you credit the Celtics some, because the Celtics' best defense in the league, they're very good, led by Brad Stevens, a hell of a coach. Maybe they played a role in that, but whatever the reason, Clint Capela was not the usual version of Clint Capela. And in the past, I think we've seen, even as recently as the Oklahoma City playoff series a year ago against Steven Adams, you would see the struggles on one end, relative struggles, of course, because Clint did still shoot 50% from the field. Let's keep that in perspective. But you would see the relative struggles on one end take a toll on his effort and his engagement overall. And that happens with a lot of young players. Saturday night, it didn't. He kept pushing. He played 34 minutes. People always wonder about the stamina. Well, folks, he played 34 minutes. He was out there down the stretch. And 17 rebounds, that is the definition of controlling what you can control. And even if Clint did not have his usual peak levels of efficiency, the touch that we've come to know him for around the bucket, he was still an enormous difference maker in terms of defense, effort, dominated the glass, 17 boards in 34 minutes, helped the Rockets overall win that battle. And then the plus-minus doesn't lie. Plus 19, the Rockets were a much better team with Clint Capela on the floor. And that's without Clint Capela having his best stuff. That is an enormous positive sign, in my opinion, as you go down the home stretch of the year towards the playoffs, because Clint Capela has graduated from just one of the pieces to a key piece. And so if he's part of that big three, we all know the record, only one loss all year in over 30 games when Chris Paul, Clint Capela, and James Harden all play. If Clint Capela is that type of star, and I think he is, he can't not show up if for whatever reason the shots aren't falling for him on a given night. He's got to play through. He's got to be the kind of piece that you can count on to give you 30-plus quality minutes every night. And even if the offensive efficiency isn't there, he's still going to be dominant enough on the glass as a defensive presence to still be worthwhile to play. That was not the case a year ago. It is the case right now, and it's one of many reasons the Rockets, now 49-13 in the year and winners of 15 in a row after a comeback over a very good Boston Celtics team in a possible NBA Finals preview. To me, it's the latest evidence of why this Rockets team is so different than they were even a year ago. Now, that's segment one of our 3 points recap. I want to talk about overall, certainly we touched on some individuals in there, but general themes, grit, tenacity. You're probably tired of me saying those buzzwords by now, but this was one of those wins for the Rockets, which was less about any individual player and more about just how much they wanted it against a Boston Celtics team that is very physical, very hard-nosed, and it probably feels very good for the Rockets to get a measure of revenge on the Celtics after what happened in Boston in late December, a game the Rockets led by 26 at one point and then ultimately lost by a couple of points right at the end. And say what you will about the final minute, the NBA acknowledged 6 blown calls, the ridiculous Marcus Smart flops against James Harden in the final 10 seconds, and I was as upset about those as anyone. But regardless about what happened in the final minute, folks, it shouldn't even have been close in the first place other than the Celtics just finding a way through sheer grit and incredibly hard-nosed play to get back in a game that they had no business getting back into. And ultimately, the Rockets, while not being down 26 points in this one, I think they probably feel that they stole one, very similarly to how Boston inevitably had that same feeling back in late December at the TD Garden in Boston. So I think in some senses, the basketball gods made sure things evened out, and these are two very good basketball teams, and hopefully we'll get a 7-game series in June to settle the score for the final time. Now, talking about the individuals in this, there's one guy that I have not mentioned yet, and by the way, it was the team's leader in scoring, and that's Eric Gordon. 27 minutes off the bench, 29 points, 7 of 11 from 3. You guys wanted to see him start to show some signs of life from behind the arc. Mentioned the other night, he was 5 of 14, which is almost 36%. Nothing to write home about, but after missing a week with, well, actually, he got a couple of weeks off, you could say, between the All-Star break and then the food poisoning right thereafter, you could see the legs looked a little bit more fresh. 36%, it was better than his season-long mark of in the 33s. Well, folks, 7 of 11, now all of a sudden he's back above 34% for the year, and boy, the Rockets needed all of those 29 points, and it comes after, again, 29 points in 27 minutes, comes after 22 and 28 on Wednesday night in L.A. So two games, it's a small sample size, but the Eric Gordon after the All-Star break, he looks rejuvenated. He looks a lot fresher than he did going into the All-Star break, in which he had a number of minor injuries to his feet, his back, all sorts of, or it was his knee, not his feet, but yeah, his knee, his back, just all sorts of little nagging things. Even if it took food poisoning to give him an extra week off, regardless, he looks a lot fresher, and the Rockets clearly are a much better team when Eric Gordon is producing to this level. Now, I didn't lead off talking about Eric because I wanted to discuss certainly the final 6 minutes of the game, especially the final three, that closing 16-7 run when the Rockets were able to flip it, and it was as much about defense, a couple of late plays, clutch developments late from the likes of Trevor Ariza, P.J. Tucker, Chris Paul, and the last 3 minutes of the game, that's sexy. I want to start with that. It certainly shows the Rockets' mental toughness. But folks, the only reason the last 3 minutes mattered was because Eric Gordon kept them in striking distance over the first 42. Because the Celtics, folks, they played out of their minds. Over 54% from three, 48% from the field, turned it over only 13 times, shot over 90% from the free throw line. The Celtics left very little on the court. And this easily could have been a 15-20 point game. We mentioned that first Rockets-Celtics game, which the Rockets went up 26. It would not have been crazy for the Celtics to get up 15-20 in the middle stage of this game and just made the lead far too much to overcome. Eric Gordon did not let it. And ultimately, the Rockets, 123 points on the game. We talked about the grit, the desire, because certainly there were some key defensive moments late. But the Rockets won this game. They put up 123 points, including 37 in the fourth and final quarter against the NBA's top defense. And they did it because Eric Gordon, again, 29 points, team high in 27 minutes, 7 of 11 from 3. And it's especially important because against a great defense, folks, it's not going to be easy for James Harden and Chris Paul. They are going to make other players beat you. And this is something you're going to see in the playoffs when you're not able to just depend on James Harden to pull out a 60-point triple-double, if that's what you need, because you're not going to be facing the Orlando Magic in the playoffs. You're going to be going up against upper echelon defenses, and it's not going to be easy for James Harden and Chris Paul. Most teams are going to force the other players on your team to step up. That's where Eric Gordon comes in. We have seen from time to time this season, he has a gear that is legitimately all-star level. He has a gear, when you look at his overall net rating, it's actually pretty comparable to Klay Thompson. And so even if the Rockets big four, let's throw in Eric Gordon with those top three, James, Chris, and Clint, even if Eric doesn't get the due on paper, Eric and Clint, that the Warriors big four do, when you look at the actual results, they're not that far different. And the Rockets are going to need that because against elite defenses, folks, it's not going to be easy for just isolation play James Harden and Chris Paul to take over games because they're going to shade. They're going to help. Opposing defenses are not going to want to let those guys beat them by themselves. So that's when you have to have your secondary players chip in. Now, certainly Trevor Ariza shooting well, that helps. You need overall, and the Rockets shooting was okay, 19 of 49, almost 39% from behind the arc. But folks, that's in large part because Eric Gordon was 7 of 11. If not for Eric, then boy, you're trending closer to 30%, which would not be good enough. You need your perimeter playmakers, aside from Chris and James, to step up, and boy, did Eric in a big way. And beyond just this game, it's interesting for me because certainly it came against a upper echelon defense, but besides just one game, I've had a lot of questions lately. Now that the Rockets have so much depth, they have this 12-man rotation, assuming Ryan Anderson's still out with a hip flexor, Brandon Wright's still out with knee soreness. When those guys come back, you've got a loaded 12-man roster there. And folks say, well, what's your optimal lineup? And of course, Chris, James, and Clint are going to be out there. And I'm seeing a lot of discussion about Luke, about Trevor, about PJ, because certainly they've been big parts of the team all year. Everybody knows the role of defense. The Rockets, yes, they're a number one offensive team in terms of efficiency, but they're also a top 10 defense. And all of those guys are very important. I think also this current 15-game winning streak, a lot of it has happened with Eric on the shelf. We mentioned before the All-Star break, he had issues with his knee and his back. Now he's had to deal with food poisoning where he missed the first three games coming back. And it's always a what have you done for me lately mindset, and Eric hasn't been out there, so he's almost been forgotten. But folks, when it gets to the playoffs in meaningful games, in my opinion, more often than not, Eric Gordon is going to be out there down the stretch, just as he was against a great Celtics defense on Saturday evening. And as far as who's at your four, it could be Ariza. Certainly, he deserved his minutes on Saturday evening, playing as well as he did. We mentioned 21 points in 34 minutes, plus 13 from the field. It could be PJ. It could be Luke Bamute. You can also mix and match in terms of who's playing at a given possession, make defense versus offense, subs. All those things are in the toolbox for Mike D'Antoni. But folks, Eric Gordon is often going to play late in games, if not close it out, because the upside of having another perimeter creator after Chris and James is substantial. Now, it's a fine line to walk. There are going to be some games, if maybe the opposing defense isn't as well equipped to slow Chris and James, then maybe you don't play Eric down the stretch. Maybe you go with Luke or PJ instead. And of course, you can have defense versus offense subs, as we mentioned. I'm not saying Eric is just automatically going to be out there down the stretch in every single game, but he's going to play a role. I'm looking it up now. He played until about the 4-minute mark in the fourth quarter, then came back in the final minute for free throw shooting purposes. Overall, he's going to be a big part of unlocking really stingy defenses. Because when you look at Golden State and teams like that, it's not just Kevin Durant and Steph Curry. It's the depth of talent. It's guys like Klay Thompson, like Draymond Green, in those third and fourth roles that are so critical, because it's not like you can just put a box around one or two of these elite players and then force it into the other guys and they're not going to be able to beat you. No, especially if they're playing leverage. Klay Thompson, he can kill you. And that's what Eric Gordon showed Saturday night. That's what he does when the Rockets are at their best. So in terms of what their best lineup is down the fourth quarter in a competitive game, yes, it's going to switch. You're going to have lots of players play over the final 12 minutes. You're going to see different combinations. You can do defense versus offense, subs, et cetera, et cetera. But Eric Gordon is a very real piece. And even though he has not gotten a lot of talk lately because he has not been out there, I think Saturday should be a big reminder of just how viable he still is, because against elite defenses, it's not going to always be easy for Chris Paul and James Harden. You're going to need a secondary playmaker to step up. That's what Eric Gordon can do. And it's a fine line. Mike D'Antoni has a lot of options at his disposal, but he's going to have to balance the need for Eric's playmaking versus more length and defense from the likes of Luke and PJ and Trevor. And it's a good problem to have. You'd much rather have too many qualified players doing too many different things than not enough. But Eric Gordon, he's in that mix as well. He showed it Saturday night. And even if he wasn't the difference maker down the stretch in the final 16-7 run, folks, you wouldn't have been in positions for that 16-7 run to matter in the first place, if not for what Eric Gordon did over the first 42, 43 minutes of that game. So salute to Eric. Again, game high, 29 points in 27 minutes. And that's all after getting 22 and 28 minutes on Wednesday in Los Angeles. He had a couple of weeks off during the All-Star break and his food poisoning, and kudos to Eric. He looks refreshed, he looks energized, and he has been a big part of how this Rockets team has kept this streak going, now at 15 consecutive wins, and of course 49-13 overall, number one in the Western Conference. Now for the final segment of the show, I want to address, elephant in the room might be too strong, but I'll say the one negative that keeps being brought up on Rockets Twitter. I see it. Some of you have mentioned it to me directly to discuss. And that's Joe Johnson, who in 13 minutes on Saturday against the Celtics did not score, was a minus 9, was 0 of 3 from the field. And whenever anything goes wrong with the Rockets, there's almost an immediate knee-jerk put in Gerald Green, because Gerald is so beloved. And of course, he's able, say what you will about his defensive liabilities, but when you have a guy who can fill it up and put up 6 points in a couple of possessions, there's going to be a segment of the fan base that always wonders, what if? And I understand where you're coming from. What I want to do here is urge some context. First, with Joe, he played just 13 minutes, only 5 in the second half. So in terms of, is Mike D'Antoni going to trust him too much down the stretch? because he's a veteran, because he's played with him before. Well, I actually thought Saturday night, Mike realized that Joe did not have it, and other than 5 minutes in the second half, he basically didn't play. He did not have a major role in this game. Secondly, as far as Joe versus Gerald, the reason I don't think that's really applicable in this instance is because with Ryan Anderson out with the hip flexor, folks, Joe Johnson, more than anything, he filled the Ryan Anderson minutes because you wanted more of a physical presence. With Ryan in his new role off the bench, playing just about 20 minutes per game, and PJ as your starter at the four, we've seen the Rockets, they're relying on more physicality from Ryan Anderson. It's strange to say, but Ryan, while of course he's still valuable for spacing, when he's playing just 20 minutes, he has become a better rebounder. He's able to throw his body around a little more on the low block. And against a Celtics team with so many physical bodies, so hard-nosed, you miss that. So I don't think you would replace Ryan Anderson with Gerald Green, who is essentially a guard only. You wanted some physical presence that could hold up on the low block. That's why Joe Johnson played in place of Ryan Anderson, and that's why I don't really accept a Joe versus Gerald comparison for this particular game, because with Ryan out, I think what you were looking for is a more diverse overall skill set, and say what you will about Gerald, he's not going to be able to play on the low block. He's also not a great mover of the basketball. And moving from Ryan to Joe, in my opinion, it's just more of a seamless transition than it would be moving from Ryan to Gerald. So that's why the Gerald Green complaints, I understand where you're coming from, but in this specific situation, I don't really see that as a fit. The more interesting debate to be had down the line, in my opinion, is Joe Johnson versus Ryan Anderson. And we've seen some comments, including before Saturday's game, from Mike D'Antoni, alluding to at least the possibility of Joe taking some of Ryan's minutes. He mentioned before Saturday saying that Ryan's just a catch-and-shoot player, whereas Joe can put the ball on the floor. And so, on paper, you can say that Joe Johnson, much like we talked about Carmelo Anthony last summer, gives you some of the same shooting qualities of Ryan Anderson, but with more diverse overall playmaking potential. And it looks that way. The unfortunate reality is that for Joe in Houston thus far, it hasn't played out that way. In his six games, he's shooting just 35% from the field and 33% from behind the arc. That's not good enough. Now, it's a small sample size. We're talking about 24 minutes per game over six games, and he's averaging a whopping 3 field goal attempts per game. That's incredibly small. So I will urge patience. It's not like, I understand the numbers in Utah, but again, take away the numbers from early in the year when he had the injury to his shooting wrist. His last 20-plus games, as I mentioned, when the Rockets signed Joe Johnson in early February, he was shooting almost 45% from the field and almost 37% from behind the arc. So no, it's not more of the same. Joe came to Houston in a rhythm. Now, maybe it's a new system. Maybe it's a new role. Maybe it's just random sample size stuff. It hasn't happened thus far. And if it continues, yes, it's a problem. And in terms of Mike's comparison before the game, Ryan catch and shoot versus Joe being more multidimensional, all that's true, but there's a level at which if Joe is not shooting at, that even if he's able to do a few more things than Ryan, at the same time, Ryan's superior shooting offsets those things. So in other words, for Joe to take Ryan's minutes, while I'm not saying Joe has to shoot maybe quite to the level of Ryan, he needs to at least be in the ballpark to where the benefits of his overall game can eventually tip the scale in his favor. Right now, they're not. 35% overall, 33% from three. So I get that. But down the road, that to me is what to watch, Joe versus Ryan. And no, I don't think Mike is going to trust Joe too much. I understand there's this tendency on Rockets Twitter to wonder about that. I've seen over the past few games, is Mike going to trust Joe too much? Is it based on their history, the proven veteran, yada, yada, yada? Well, folks, keep in mind the injuries that you've had. Eric Gordon, Ryan Anderson, these are key pieces in which the Rockets needed bodies to fill minutes. Now, when you get your veterans back, it's not going to be as easy for Joe to get minutes. Yes, I think Joe is ahead of Gerald Green in terms of Mike D'Antoni's pecking order based on the diversity of his skill set, the amount of tools in his toolbox. I understand that. But in terms of who's going to play in the playoffs, folks, I don't think Gerald Green was going to play in the playoffs even before you picked up Joe Johnson. So that's really not the comparison that matters. The comparison that matters is Joe versus Eric, Joe versus Luke, Joe versus Ryan, guys like that. And folks, I'm not seeing any evidence that Mike is going to throw him out there just for the sake of throwing him out there. Because, folks, Luke clearly is a far superior defender. Eric Gordon certainly is a better playmaker, especially relative to a 36-year-old Joe Johnson. And Ryan Anderson, right now, is a better shooter. Now, Joe needs to pick up his level of play. And if he does, then yes, Joe can bang on the low block in much the same way that Ryan Anderson can, sort of a small ball four, but while giving you more passing, more diverse overall skills, more athleticism, more playmaking, more isolation ability. And if that happens, great. I think the Rockets would love to see it, and it very well could happen. But if it doesn't, no, I don't think the Rockets are going to lean on Joe Johnson excessively. Folks, he played 5 minutes in the second half on Saturday night against the Celtics, and that was with no Ryan Anderson. I don't think this is as big of a deal as some of you are making it out to be. They're using the fill minutes now, and down the road, when you get Ryan Anderson back, when you get Brandon Wright back, Joe's going to have to make more shots to play more. And I think he knows that what he's shooting right now, and it's a small sample, it may just be flukish, but 35% in six games, 33% from behind the arc, it's not good enough. He needs to get his shooting percentage back in the 40s in terms of his three-point shot. I believe probably at least 35% is what should lead to see him as a superior option to Ryan Anderson. But right now, in my opinion, it's not the time to worry. Again, he played a whopping 13 minutes on Saturday night and only 5 in the second half. And even with him only playing 13 minutes, still, other than James Harden, no one played more than 35 minutes. That's how deep the Rockets are. And folks, that's with Ryan Anderson still on the shelf. So when Ryan gets back, and Mike said on Friday at practice he only anticipates it being another game or two, it's not expected to be something particularly long-lasting, and the Rockets actually don't play again until Tuesday in Oklahoma City. So I think maybe towards the end of next week, it is going to be a tough stretch at Oklahoma City, at Milwaukee, at Toronto. You get Ryan back. And at that point, the bar becomes a lot higher, and either Joe's going to make more shots, or he's not going to play. Right now, you're a little bit shorthanded without Ryan Anderson. You need a more physical body. That's why Joe's out there. But no, he's not playing excessively, in my opinion. 13 minutes is really not that big of a deal. And again, it's only the 13 minutes because there's no Ryan Anderson. Not saying it can't become an issue down the line in terms of Mike trusting him too much, giving him too much deference. I'm just saying right now, after a game in which he played 13 minutes, and that without Ryan Anderson, it's not a concern that's anywhere near the forefront of my mind. Folks, enjoy the win, and we'll worry about Joe Johnson a few days down the line if and when that situation comes to a head. And it may not. I mean, truth be told, as we said, it's six games for Joe in Houston, and it may just be that between the new team, randomness of a small sample size, he may just start making more shots the way he did over his last 20-plus games in Utah. And if that's the case, then Joe's the same guy that we all thought we were getting in early February when folks were over the moon about signing a 7-time former All-Star. So small sample size, I would urge that more than anything else. Just realize how tiny the 6-game sample of 24 minutes per game is. But even if you're excessively worried at this point in time, then folks realize the Rockets aren't 100%. The bar when Ryan gets back is going to be even higher to play. And folks, don't worry about Joe Johnson right now. Just celebrate the win and celebrate this Rockets team that 49-13, winners of 15 consecutive basketball games, remains number one in the entire NBA in position for home court advantage throughout the NBA playoffs. And yes, that would include the NBA Finals and a matchup against those same Boston Celtics, potentially, that we saw on Saturday night at Toyota Center. So with that, I will wrap up the show right here. As always, thanks to you guys for tuning in, our loyal listeners. If you want more from the program, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I am at Ben Dubose. The show is at Locked On Rockets. Also, Facebook. Go to facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. Go to LockedOnRockets.com. That's our website. All those ways are excellent channels for you to communicate with us, give us questions, suggestions for the show, inquire about becoming a potential advertiser. If there's anything we can do to make this better for you, the diehard Rockets fan, well, folks, we would love to hear from you. We would love to do just that. Also, don't hesitate to reach out by email, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com, and that's how you can ask me, again, questions, suggestions, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better podcast. For now, though, I hope all of you guys enjoy the remainder of your Sundays and your weekends, and Well, we have a couple of days off, and then the Rockets back in action against the Oklahoma City Thunder in Oklahoma City on Tuesday night. Look forward to talking with you guys again then. For now, folks, enjoy your weekend, and once again, the very happy final from Toyota Center. Rockets 123, Celtics 120, Rockets now 49-13 on the season, and winners of 15 consecutive games.